Hero.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Brandy's Peach Tea. Yeah, episode 147 for those who are counting. And I don't know, nothing against Switchfoot, but this is their song Sooner or Later from the Electra soundtrack, which in some weird ways kind of reflects a lot of the film without giving away too much. It's there. Someone recorded it. But yeah, thanks for joining us on this Tuesday evening. As always, if you're joining us on a Facebook live stream, if you're joining us on YouTube or X or Instagram or wherever you found your audio only podcast, we appreciate the support. Yeah, we got some stuff to talk about, man. It was a big Super Bowl that was on Sunday, so you know, congrats to the Chiefs on taking that one. But we also got some movie trailers to draw, talk about. One being the most watched movie trailer ever on YouTube in a 48-hour span. So we got that to talk about. And we're going to continue our dive back into the pre-MCU Marvel era with 2005's Elektra and the director's cut of Elektra. So you didn't know the director's cut existed. We watched it and we checked it out, so you can go ahead and we can go ahead and talk about that. You know, obviously spoiler free because it's a 2005 movie, so it's where it is. Jason's clearing up some technical problems at the moment, but yeah, we're excited to go ahead and to dive into it because it's a lot of fun. You know, when we have the MCU now and we are 30 something movies into it. But yeah, there were Marvel movies prior, and it's fascinating to look back on those movies and just kind of get a flavor, maybe sometimes appreciate what we've got now. You know, even in phase 4 and 5, having been like consistently banger after banger, you know, we had the comparisons interesting. So maybe appreciate what we kind of got nowadays, you know, if that. But let me go ahead and cut that music off there quickly. Yeah. The era when soundtracks were a big thing, and you know, the Elektra the album came out, and it was Daredevil the album, which we talked glowingly about last week. And that was one of the best soundtracks of anything. Especially a superhero movie that we've had and still stands up to this day. Cool comment here from Tim, friend of the show. Jennifer Garner is an American treasure. Not debating that. That's not what we're here to debate, go talk about tonight. I can tell you that. But Jason, you're back. You're going ahead and you took care of some of those technical issues you're having over there.
I did, of course. Of course, as soon as we start the show, my internet goes out. So, yeah, but I think I'm okay for now. So, I'm back.
All right. Jason, how was your week, man? How did it, how's it been since our last episode and we traveled back in time to 2003 and talked about Ben Affleck's Daredevil?
Oh, yeah, no, week's been all right. You know, I just I wanted to sort of officially share something that has died from our childhood. And today is symbolically the day it died, and that, of course, is the New York City snow days. Remember the snow days,
yes.
Ed? Those rare days where the schools would close?
Mm-hmm.
Those days are gone now because we had our first snow day today, and I was sitting on Zoom all day with kids, and the instruction's great because it's like you have to be on. You have to be on the full camera as the kids, no, they don't even have to show up. If they just email you, mark them present. It's like, okay.
What?
It's not that bad, but yeah, but so it was our first non-snow day, and Man, I was getting nostalgic for those days when snow days weren't work days.
Yeah, that was those were fun days. I actually had the option to close my office today, so I'm the one who's in charge of that type of thing. But I'm like,
nice.
Manhattan,
did you close or keep it open?
No, we kept it open just because it was like Manhattan doesn't usually get hit too bad, honestly. And we were hosting like an offsite, so we had like 60 visitors in town. Mm. So we can't shut it down and for a big meeting like that. They all made it in fine. They're good to go.
Yeah.
It all worked out. And honestly, the snow wasn't too bad.
I know. Look, I mean, I didn't have to go out in it, but it looked pretty bad from where I was sitting. But again, like I live in Queens and, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying from one who, and I told stories about this in the past on here, thankfully it's been a while, but the snow thrower and shoveling and all of that bullshit that you got to do. And thankfully, it was fairly easy because Angie took care of it. She got to work from home, nice. So that was kind of cool. And it wasn't too bad on it, though. No, nice. I think one of us can handle it, so that's never too bad. Because sometimes it turns into like a fiasco where we're shoveling in shifts and all this other crazy shit. So, that can be rough. All right. Well, let's go ahead and enough with the snow chat. Yeah, let's enough that.
No more snow chat.
No more snow chat. Quick piece of news before we get into our topics of the day or the week. Little news dropped here right before we came on. So Travis Knight, director of Kubo and the Two Strings and Bumblebee, a movie that we discussed on here. I thought so. Re kickstarted the, you know, Transformers live action films again, got the franchise reinvigorated after Michael Bay did what Michael Bay did to it. And we went into that in great detail for a month plus. But he is apparently going to direct, he's about to officially sign on to direct the Masters of the Universe live action reboot, which is currently at Amazon MGM Studios. That thing's bounced around a bunch and the script's being rewritten and they got to find the casting and stuff like that too. That's been bouncing around. So that is the piece of news that dropped here. Now, it's funny. I actually was doing some thinking recently about the live-action Masters of the Universe because I feel like that's inevitable. Like the animated series on Netflix is, you know, been a pretty big hit, especially for those if you didn't like the first season. Second season seems to have gotten a lot of popularity, and that's been rolling too. But I would imagine a live-action reboot is, you know, a given. Casting.
We need this. Like, I just want to put this out there. We need this. Our generation, the people who grew up watching He-Man, because the reboots of the cartoons are fun or whatever, but they're still fucking cartoons at the end of the day. And at the end of the day, the only live-action He-Man we have is Dolph Lundgren. And anyone who listens to the show knows I'm a huge fan of Dolph Lundgren. But that cannot be. I can't go to my grave with that being the only He-Man movie I get. I can't. I loved him too much as a kid for that to be how that chapter of my life ends.
That is a big statement, Jason, and I'm not going to disagree with it whatsoever. That is a big statement. Know something? Let's just discuss the Travis Knight part, and then I'll share my fan casting that randomly popped up in my head. And I think I texted you and Rick what my thoughts were. What do you think? Does this excite you about the possibility of this getting going? I mean, Travis Knight directing, being that, you know, I don't know if you saw Kubo and the Two Strings or not, but at least the Bumblebee aspect of this. I mean, what do you think?
I like it. I like Bumblebee. I think Bumblebee's fun. He in Bumblebee, he shows that he knows how to handle franchise material that isn't necessarily his, but he still kind of gets it. Because I thought Bumblebee, you know, and look, again, I'm going to preface this. I saw Bumblebee on the heels of watching all of the Michael Bay Transformers in a row. Anything after that would have been golden glow, you know what I mean? So, I mean, maybe I'm overestimating him, but I felt that he got Bumblebee, and I really enjoyed that movie. I'm all for seeing what he can do with this. And again, we need this live action reboot. We need it.
Yeah, and I also think with Bumblebee, and again, I saw that, and we talked about this. It wasn't my first time watching it after we went through the Michael Bay movies. That it reinvigorated, you know, the franchise after it was in a really bad spot. But he seems to understand source material and will do the, you know, the thinking, it seems like, and doing the homework to go ahead and to, you know, apply knowledge to it, which Michael Bay, like, pumped his chest about, that he didn't know anything about Transformers, but yet kept directing five movies. So that was a breath of fresh air. And also...
And how do you brag about that? How do you brag? How do you brag that I am wiping my ass with source material by never reading it and making five movies that have nothing to do with it except name only? How do you brag about that and take our money?
I have no idea. I got no fucking idea, man. But I will say, though, that he put, like, a lot of heart into a Transformers movie. For the first time really ever with Bumblebee. So I think like something like Masters of the Universe, which is, you know, very magical and mystical and all of that stuff, could use an infusion of heart that's into it to make sure that the movie, you know, is at least grounded on some level. And, you know, it makes everything likable. So I kind of think he's probably a pretty damn good choice for it. As far as the casting... Alan Ritchson, for those who watched Reacher or watched Titans, and he was Hawk in Titans, that's my pick for He-Man. Not really Prince Adam, right? I think Prince Adam should be a smaller dude. I kind of like that thing that Kevin Smith's Masters of the Universe did, where Adam is a significantly smaller person and like a normal-sized person, and then He-Man is larger than life. I kind of like that concept because when we were kids, the action figures were the same damn thing with different clothes.
Yes, and I was going to say, in all fairness, I think the intention of the original was to do that, except that's money, and you can just color swap these cells, and you've got Prince Adam instead of him, and you could just color swap these action figures, and you got two action figures for the price of making one. I mean, so, but I think that's the implication from the character.
Yeah, exactly. So... I'm for that. I even wouldn't mind seeing Chris Wood, who does the voice of Prince Adam and He-Man on on the Masters of the Universe, Kevin Smith's version. I actually wouldn't mind even seeing him because it's not like he's a small dude. He was also Mon-El on Supergirl. I would not mind seeing him get to play Prince Adam.
Actually,
yeah, he's pretty cool.
I could see that now that you bring that in context of that character, because he's charming but slight, and he could play it up. Like, I think he could do it well, and not, because I think the thing with Prince Adam is you run the risk of him being annoying. It's like, oh, you sniveling fucking idiot, just turn into He-Man. And I think that's what Kevin Smith gets right, because Kevin Smith doesn't give us a lot of He-Man, but we're invested in Prince Adam's story. So I think him portraying that, I think, would make him likable with his sort of weaknesses. Yeah, that's a really good pick.
Yeah, and Alan Ritchson, look at the guy. He basically is He-Man. There's not many actors who can act that can pull that off. I don't want to get a jacked up wrestler or something like that who can't really do it, because he is going to be on the screen a lot. So I figured somebody like that. Plus, his career is starting to blow up now. So this would be a perfect opportunity.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, Reacher is really popular. I mean, that's really been like one of the top. It was the top streaming show. Yeah, that's where he's really blowing up. Not like from Hawk, but little by little, he's been getting there. So, you know, his time to shine is coming, and Masters of the Universe could be a perfect opportunity for him. So we'll see if that actually happens, because I'm sure casting, maybe sometime at some point this year, will get along once they wrap up Travis Knight to the right. So, all right. Well, let's go on and get into our topics then. Big trailer dropped during the Super Bowl for Deadpool and Wolverine. So, number one, we have an official title, right? Not just Deadpool 3, and we kept on putting it in air quotes and stuff like that. That was like a thing. But we have it. And for those who watched the Super Bowl and just saw what they had, it was really a trailer that directed you to watch the full trailer online. So, which was, I thought was kind of interesting, but based on, you know, it was just like, yeah, it was a playful thing they did with like sports and stuff like that. And then they kind of directed you to go to that, which was like, oh, okay. But apparently it worked because, I mean, it broke the record. It broke Spider-Man No Way Home's YouTube record for the most viewed trailer of all time in like a 48-hour period.
Wow.
Yeah, that's bonkers. Wow.
Well, I mean, if anything was going to do it, it was going to be this. And I think it's just so much buildup for it. You know, it's like it's Deadpool coming to Disney. It's an R. They're keeping the R rated. We're getting Hugh Jackman back as Wolverine, which is something we were told was never going to happen again. And here he is. And it's, I don't know, probably going to be a comedic, like, you know, version of it, because this is a fucking Deadpool movie and Hugh Jackman is very funny. So how could you not be excited for this?
No. Well, let's watch it. Let's check it out. Let's give it another view. Let's check it out here. So let's add that to the stream for those who maybe did not see it before. Let me go ahead and add that here. Bang. And let's go ahead and check this out together.
Happy birthday to you.
All right, okay.
It's been a challenging few years, for sure. But I'm happy. That is because of each and every one of you. I'm the luckiest man alive.
Make a wish, buddy.
Wade Wilson?
Who's asking?
Whoa.
Is that supposed to be scary? Pegging isn't new for me, friendo, but it is for Disney.
Mr. Wilson, you appear to have soiled yourself while unconscious.
I wasn't unconscious. Who are you? Why am I here?
Walk with me.
Wade.
You are special. This is your chance
to be a hero among heroes.
I smell what you're stepping in, Sensei. Your little cinematic universe is about to change forever. I'm the Messiah. I am Marvel Jesus.
This part. Wait!
Don't just stand there, you ape. Give me a hand up. Nope, I'm actually okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, there is a hell of a lot to unpack there, my friend. There is, hot. So I guess as far as a trailer goes, judging the trailer, I mean, phenomenal. I was excited for this movie before.
I'm
super
so
excited now. Yeah.
That's same. Like it embodies everything I want in a Deadpool movie. Whether or not that's going to be the movie, you know, we'll discuss that when we get there. Because you know, we call it a shill here, but the reality is like everything I want in a Deadpool movie is there. Him talking to the camera, inappropriate stuff. We get to see the returning characters. They tease Wolverine, like, and it pretty much sets up that yes, this is Deadpool kills the. The Marvel non-cinematic universe, the Sony Fox stuff.
Yeah, I think
it gives me everything I want.
Yeah, so for those who were worried that, oh, you know, Deadpool was going to be neutered by Disney and Marvel Studios? No. We get a pegging joke in the first, like, fucking 30 seconds of the trailer. So, definitely not a thing.
And a direct, like, a direct joke on Disney. Like, I love that.
Yeah, that's great. So, yeah, you're right. We got the fourth wall breaking is still here. It's going to be R-rated, so they're not holding that back at all. They're going to let, you know, Ryan Reynolds and Levy do whatever the hell that is that they want to do, which is great. First R-rated. This is the actual first R-rated Marvel Studios film, for sure. So that's exciting as well. And, like, you're right. We never thought we were going to see Hugh Jackman again as Wolverine, and we're going to. We only see him briefly. One of that one clip there that we get, just to talk about the Wolverine part, because there's not a lot of it, I figured we can get that out of the way quick, is it looks like it's Patch,
yeah,
who's from behind at the casino table that's there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So Wolverine's one of his aliases. Maybe he's in Madripoor as well, as he often is in the comics. Madripoor was established.
Yeah, he's usually in tuxedo, right? Like, that's his, like, spy attire.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like an alias that he would go with. And who often hangs out in Madripoor, so that's something that's in the MCU already. So that's something that's pretty cool and exciting. And we just get a brief shadow of him at the very end of it. So I'm curious to know if the next trailer is going to be more Wolverine heavy and less, you know, Deadpool heavy. Curious to see if that's the way they choose to market this thing. Another thing we talk about on this show a lot, and I know you and Rick usually avoid trailers unless we're talking about them here. This movie shows you stuff, mm-hmm. but doesn't give you basically jack shit about the plot.
No. I mean, we can make assumptions, but ultimately we don't really know. We know Wade Wilson is sent to do something for the TVA. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, he looks like he's getting recruited by the TVA. That seems to be pretty clear. It looks like they're catching him up to speed on the MCU currently, like that scene where they're showing him some random MCU stuff. It looks like some Thor Ragnarok, Avengers and stuff like that. So he gets to see some of that there. So that's pretty cool. Pretty hilarious that he's saluting Captain America on the one screen that he's in, because they show the scene where he's just kind of like this. I thought that's pretty great.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, there's also that wasteland where he does the really cool loading of the guns thing and catches the magazine in midair and everything like that. That's obviously the 20th Century Fox thing behind him the entire time.
Yeah, yeah. This movie is going to be filled with Easter eggs. Like, I'm going to have to watch this. You're shooting some stuff, and I'm like, I didn't catch that because I've only watched it twice. Mm-hmm. This thing is packed with Easter eggs. This whole movie is going to be packed with Easter eggs. And I think I'm hoping it's going to be a clever way to make fun of people who look for Easter eggs, because this is the movie to do it in. You know what I mean? Like, to make fun of us, pretty much.
Yeah, basically. I mean, it's probably going to be the most meta Deadpool movie we've gotten. And it's the first two have been pretty damn meta, to be honest with you.
Yes, absolutely.
A couple other things that are seen in here as well is Pyro is back from the first three X-Men movies.
Right.
So I thought that was pretty exciting to see.
He's wild.
Yeah, he's the character who's like, this is like the best part. There's also in the right before we see Wolverine at the end of this, lying on the floor by Deadpool is Secret Wars number 5, which has Doctor Doom on the cover of it. And it's laying about 10 feet from him, if that.
I didn't even see that.
Yeah, that was... that's a pretty big deal, because this movie, the implications are, this is supposed to be the movie that really starts pushing things forward towards Secret Wars now. Like, we're really going to start ramping things up and getting there, because this is obviously a multiversal movie, whether it's focusing on wiping out the Fox, 20th Century Fox Marvel movies, or not. I have a feeling it's going to do much more than that. I don't think that's going to be the main focus of the film, but it's obviously going to be a part of it. It's going to be my guess. And apparently near the Secret Wars number 5, is a bottle of the soda from Incredible Hulk that he was making in Brazil.
What?
Yes.
So that's how, is that like a theory that we're going to get Edward Norton in this movie?
No, I don't know. I just think it's a lot of the pictures have leaked a lot these days with this and stuff, but we still don't really know much about it. It's just some weird, it seems to be he's stuck in some sort of weird MCU Fox, you know, 20th Century Fox, like kind of wasteland type thing that's going on around there. So I guess this random shit that's been thrown all over the place.
Gotcha. Okay. That's actually pretty funny. I can't wait to see this movie. Like, it's, we could speculate all we want, but like, I don't know. Did any of us walk into Deadpool 2 thinking we were getting the Juggernaut? No.
No,
you know, so like, and that's the point of these movies. And so we could speculate all we want. And I'm going to speculate on one thing once I finish this point. But the reality is, it's like, they literally can do anything in the Deadpool movies, and they've given us now a plot or the implication of a plot where they've expanded what they can do. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't think there's any way that we're going to correctly speculate what's going to go on in this movie. However, having said that, I realized as I was watching the trailer the second time with you, we are 100% getting a scene where this Deadpool kills old Wolverine Deadpool, played by Ryan Reynolds, and Brian Reynolds is going to play both of them. You know that's going to happen.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of that, and we'll discuss the Deadpool. You know, we'll finally get to the first Deadpool 1 and 2. You know, in a couple of months over here, because we're going to do a countdown of all the Fox X-Men movies leading up to Deadpool and Wolverine. Yeah, if you remember, at the end of Deadpool 2, remember, he found a way to time travel and to go within stuff. And he sees Hugh Jackman in the post-credit scenes, and he sees, you know, the old Deadpool from X-Men Origins Wolverine in that, which is also how I'm guessing that in the beginning of the trailer, the birthday party scene is there, and then everyone's back. The whole X-Force, Shatterstar, you know, the other dude that's there. Dopinder's there, Blind Al is there. I'm guessing he used that whole thing to start bringing everyone back and kind of fix up his life, because it looks like Wade is kind of like retired. Mm-hmm. At this point, we see his suit hanging up, yeah. And it looks like he's got a name tag and he's working somewhere, like in a retail store or something like that.
Yeah, and he's acting very chipper, and he's got the wig on, and
yeah.
Absolutely. I think what's going to happen is the TVA came there. Like, not to recruit him at first, but because he's been whizzing around the fucking universe, is changing time and creating alternate timelines. That's what I think is what we're going to find out.
Yeah, it should be. Oh, man, it's going to be a blast. So the speculated villain of this movie is Cassandra Nova. Now, for those who read X-Men comics, Cassandra Nova is actually kind of Charles Xavier's twin sister that like popped up later on and stuff like that, and was like he's basically like the yin to his yang and everything, like truly even more than like Magneto is. Apparently she also tried to even like kill him in the wound. Yeah. So there's a scene of like a back of like a bald headed person. Yeah, it's kind of nuts. That we believe that we see the back of her head that's in this. So that's who they're speculating is the villain, the real main villain of the movie, even though we don't really know for sure. So that's also another theory that's being floated around as well. But I'm sure it's going to be torn apart. There's another thing going around. There's a quick shot of something that looks like it's Dr. Doom, but I don't think it is. It's just a resemblance at all. But could be a Doombot.
Yeah, I saw that on the internet. Like that.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not buying that. Jason, no, right?
Yeah. No. I mean, it's a grainy photo. It's like, I think if we were meant to see a Doombot, we would have seen a Doombot. Like, I think that's just a grainy photo of someone in a mask.
What, do you think there's a chance we maybe, like, we get Dr. Doom in this? Or maybe, like, in a post-credit scene or something?
I don't think so. Maybe a post-credit scene. I don't think he's going to be in the movie proper. maybe a post-credit scene. Maybe they mention him. Maybe there is a setup. Or, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's a real fucking villain. Who knows? But I think it would be weird to roll him out in the MCU proper in a Deadpool movie. I don't see them doing that.
Okay. I agree. I was just saying with the Secret Wars stuff that's being danced around this movie, and again, we never would have thought Deadpool would be the one who's leading the charge towards setting up Avengers Secret Wars. But, I mean, the speculation is that this is it. This is the one that's really going to, you know, kick things into high gear moving forward for that. So I'm fascinated, honestly. And it is the only MCU movie we're getting this year. So, you know, there's a lot there, man. There's a lot. And yeah, it's good to see the excitement's there for the film.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is one that's going to bring it back because this is Deadpool. You know, it's funny. It's Ryan Reynolds, and I think even the harshest MCU critics, the people who are like, oh yeah, they've lost it, you know, whatever after Thanos. I think even they're excited to see what this is going to look like in Disney.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, there is a little bit of irony that this is, you know, the Fox X-Men universe's two most popular characters are the ones who are somewhat being relied on to kickstart the MCU again.
Yes, but, you know, very, very apropos considering we're talking about multiverses. And, you know, my thing about the MCU's these phases is they haven't doubled down on the multiverse enough for me. Because, you know, I mean, we're still kind of kicking around what's going on. Like, this is doubling down in a really big way. So I'm for it.
I agree. All right. So speaking of it, and a rumored character that is supposed to be showing up in Deadpool and Wolverine, Elektra. So, yeah, we've gone ahead and dabbled in the pre-MCU era of Marvel movies, and yeah, this is a 20th Century Fox Marvel film, I'll put that in quotes, that did happen. It was a spinoff of 2003's Daredevil, which we covered last week. Stars Jennifer Gardner returning in the title role of Elektra. And yeah, this is one that sort of in the theatrical run was dead on arrival. And I can understand why, if I'm going to be completely honest. I remember there not being a lot of buzz around this. There's been stories Jennifer Gardner didn't even want to do this thing, but was, you know, held by the contract that she signed when started choosing to star in Daredevil. So they kind of had her by the contract, you know, I would say the contract balls, if you want to call it that, that they had her by to do this one.
Had her by the short hairs, they did.
Yeah, so she apparently wasn't about it. Eventually gave into doing this thing. Overall thoughts on this? This movie's a rough watch. This is it's pretty bad. I mean, there's no sugarcoating this shit whatsoever.
Yeah.
Jason, what is this the first time you saw this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So every time we come across a comic book movie that I didn't see, I always hope, I really hope that, oh, this is just a hidden gem, a diamond in the rough that I missed. And it's never that. It's always something like this because I pick and choose what the fuck I see. I'll tell you my story about watching this. I watched this back to back with the director's cut, by the way. Don't ever do that. Ever. Okay. Like back to back, like I did it over a couple of days, but it was like I had to watch it in parts because it's been really busy last week. Mm-hmm. So I got like halfway through the first time, and I texted you and Rick. Yeah, I don't hate this, but I don't love this. And then I realized the kid was a fucking central part of this movie, and the kid has superpowers. And I was like, this fucking sucks. And that's my review. This fucking sucks.
I mean, do you feel strongly enough to say the thing?
Fuck you. No, because this movie doesn't care. Like, when I say, when I say fuck you movie, it's because the movie has done something so egregious that it has upset me to the point where I need to vent my frustration and hope that it cares. This movie clearly doesn't care about anything. I could yell fuck you movie until I'm blue in the face, and this movie would just go, nah, we got paid. We're union, you know? Like, because that's the problem with this movie, is it's lazy and no one cares. So not fuck you movie, just, hey man, chill out movie, be a movie.
Oh, but, yeah, so I agree. I mean, there's really, man, if I was to look for a silver lining for this movie, there isn't any. I mean,
no, I have two silver linings. I do okay, have two things. One, I do like Jennifer Garner as an actress a lot.
Okay.
She's at the height of her power. This is Alias Jennifer Garner. So she's also very attractive. So it's like I'm getting to watch. And here's the thing. We talked last week how Ben Affleck wasn't at a point in his career where he could elevate poor material, right? Mm-hmm. This material, no one can elevate. Like, this was just dismal. This wasn't even, like, outlandishly fun bad. It was dismal. And so, like, you know, she's not elevating it, but no one can. But I'm going to say that she is a silver lining. And Terrence Stamp as Stig, I think that's also a big silver lining.
Okay, I mean, I'll give you the fact that they're in the movie. If
that ever sure really... You did it.
No, I'm good. I don't know. It looks like you're having you appear frozen. Oh, now you're moving a little bit. You good? Okay, we're having some technical difficulties again here. Sorry, we'll try to work through this quickly. Yeah, I'll say Jennifer Garner, I guess you could say she does what she can with this. I mean, it's not the most exciting Elektra that we get. I mean, she seemed like she was having a bit more fun in Daredevil, and in this, it's just kind of like, hey, it's here. Terrence Stamp is in, what, three scenes max? He's not really giving
not
much
a lot. And look, I'm not saying it's like save the movie silver lining. I'm saying like, oh, hey, there's something. That's all.
Okay. But yeah, no, well, whatever. Let's do our usual thing. Let's talk about characters. As far as Elektra goes,
okay.
She is brought back in somewhat of a Palpatine way, if I'm going to just go there with it. Elektra is back somehow. it's like, yeah, in the beginning of the movie, they go through this little intro with Stick explaining that sometimes they don't even have a name, really, but it's like the good guys who fight the hand and battle of good and evil. Sometimes they can see the future a little bit, and sometimes they can bring back the dead. And I guess Stick brought her back after she was somewhat resuscitated in an ambulance somehow?
Yeah. I watched this movie twice, and I never understood it.
Yeah, right? Like, it wasn't just me. It's not really explained.
It's not. It's just it was something like she was. It was a mixture of the worst of both worlds, where it's like she's not really dead, even though we killed her in Daredevil. There's a pulse, and then like Stick does magic, you know, and she's brought back. So it's like, I don't know, man. Commit to something, man. At least have her dead. Give us Lazarus Pit her. Like, there's got to be a Lazarus Pit type thing in the Marvel universe. These comic book companies have been ripping each other off for decades. It's got to be something they could have used.
Yeah, and I guess at the end of Daredevil, there is like when the Grail chain and necklace is left on the roof for Matt. you're led to believe that Elektra is still alive somehow. That doesn't really sync up somewhat here. I mean, did she get resuscitated in the ambulance and then leave that for Matt, and then she decided to go disappear off the face of the planet?
See, this movie doesn't care. This movie doesn't give a shit. Daredevil? Daredevil might care. This movie? Hey, oh, you got a plot hole? Take a fucking number, buddy. Sit down. Watch a movie.
I will say Jennifer Gardner, like, she does do what she can with the fight scenes that she's given. We don't get a lot of them.
No.
And no, there's
which
really
is
not,
baffling actually. To me. Like, you get Jennifer Garner at the height of her powers in Alias, which again I'm rewatching. And like she can do a fight scene. And even as much as we don't like some of the fight scenes in the Daredevil movies, they're good fight scenes. They just make no sense in the context of the movie. Like, she can do a fight scene.
Yeah.
Why you hired her because she could do a fight scene? Why aren't you letting her do fight scenes?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why you wouldn't try to like write some more in here. But also, an interesting tidbit was this movie was filmed very quickly during a hiatus that in her schedule while filming Alias.
Yeah,
they just jammed this one in.
Because hey, whatever. Wait, we gotta. We union, all right? Look, if Jennifer Garner wants to come down here and shoot Elektra in 3 days, that's what she's going to do. Ed, sit down, shut up, review the movie, all right? I'm going to go over and have a coffee break.
And by the way, so this movie revolves around something where the Hand and the Good Guy Clan are fighting over what's called the Treasure. I'm going to just call them a Good Guy Clan because they don't have a fucking name. Stick is with them. They have some ninjas.
Yeah, I don't know.
Apparently, somehow Elektra ended up with them, and she gets trained. Elektra finds her way to Stick to get trained and gets kicked out, which turns out to be this entire lesson that he was teaching her.
It's
for her to go out and become an assassin and kill a bunch of people for hire to come back to this one mission. Really?
Like, Stick is playing 20-dimensional chess with no one. This doesn't make any sense. Like, the reveal, like, let's just jump to it because we go around. The reveal at the end of this movie is Stick hired her for the job that she's supposed to do, which turns her into a family woman. And it's like Stick masterminded this whole thing to get her in the Stick clan. It's so absurdly crazy.
So, like, did Stick figure, hey, while I'm teaching her this lesson, she's gonna wipe out some fucking evil people in the fucking during her training. So just let her go do it and get paid and stuff like that, and I'll get this guy McCabe to be her fucking agent, who books her jobs. What?
Who she gets killed?
I'm gonna get to that in a second because that is bonkers.
Okay, all
right. Okay, yeah, that is right. Bonkers. Well, what happens with that?
Right.
Yeah. That's bonkers. So, because I feel like Stick's lesson is the main issue with the plot of this movie. That the fact that we're led to believe that this is all part of the plan the entire time. Well, by the way, Stick is just being a pool shark, apparently. Oh, and doing that.
You know what that was? You know what that was, Ed? You got to remember. I want you to close your eyes and remember the early 2000s. Smell the cigarettes in the bars, okay? And remember how fucking obsessed we were as a culture about pool and pool halls, right? Can you hear Christopher Walken? Like, hey, it's pool hall junkies. We're making lots of movies. Like, we were making movies about pool halls. We were obsessed with pool halls. We were playing pool. I don't even know if pool halls still exist now.
That's a good question. I don't even know. I have no idea. By the way, if you didn't see it, I think it's a BMW Super Bowl commercial that dropped for Christopher Walken. You should absolutely watch it because it's fucking great. It was probably my favorite one.
I have to go and just watch the Super Bowl commercials. That's what I got to do. Oh, do I owe you an apology or congratulations for your team winning or losing?
Angie's team is the Kansas City Chiefs. They won. I root for her team when my team's out of it, so.
So then I offer my warmest congratulations for your team's victory.
Sure, there you go. I know, it's very heartfelt right there for you.
Not generic at all, I promise.
No, not in the least. By the way, so there's a lot of things I want to talk about with Electra still, because that's going to be the chunk of our probably discussion here. So she has an agent who books her jobs while she's learning this lesson from Stick. And the agent named McCabe basically sees her cleaning up after herself because she cleans up her DNA after she fucking commits hits and assassinations. This is what happens.
I mean, I my question is, why is her DNA there if she's that good?
I don't know. That's a fair question. What is she doing?
It's not her blood on the floor.
Yeah, I really didn't understand that thing, and they also set up this weird OCD thing with her that goes nowhere.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right.
Right, between the cleaning, and then, like, she lays out her bathroom stuff, her toothbrush and all this other shit, and then she separates her fruit in a certain way when she's in a kitchen, and then she's right. Counting her steps at one point, and I'm like, but where is this going? It goes
and it nowhere. Goes nowhere. Nowhere.
I'm so happy to know that it wasn't just me that thought that didn't catch the payoff of this.
No, there's no payoff. What, you want a payoff? Go watch Daredevil. You want a fucking payoff? You're watching Elektra now, all right? Sit down and watch a movie. I mean, it's a thing. It's the worst movie we've covered on this podcast by far, right? I was asked what the worst movie was, and I thought of a couple, and then I went, oh no, I've got the four movies take that title. That is four to the five Transformers. This is certainly not that, right? This is definitely one of the laziest movies we've covered.
Yeah, this movie is super lazy, man. It sets up a bunch of shit that goes absolutely fucking nowhere. I have most of my notes are just things that were set up that there was zero payoff for at all. And a lot of it is around Elektra because, I mean, yes, a lot of the story revolves around her. Rightfully so, it is her movie, but no other characters really get any kind of character development besides Elektra, which if I guess we'll call it character development of what's going on.
Was going to say, like, you got to put that in air quotes because her character development is, like, honestly, it's misogynistic in my opinion, because her whole development, her whole arc is, I need a family. I need to be a wife and a mother because she starts this movie off with, you know, I'm by myself and I'm alone. And by the end of this movie, she's fucking crying because she just found this family and she's flirting with the guy. And we're watching a goddamn rom-com. And it's like, you know, that's her character development. It's like, I don't know. I thought you were scarred because your father was killed. I thought there was... I mean, Elektra is an actual character in the comic book.
Mm-hmm.
This whole, I just felt so, again, lazy.
I'll tell you something. I'm going to push back against that a little bit because I think you're giving this movie too much credit to think that it was even attempting to push towards that. I'm not going to push back and say, I'm going to say this. You, Jason, you just gave more thought about her character arc than this movie does. Because this movie, right? And these are some of my notes that I'm going to just get to. And I'm going to be honest, I'm getting more aggravated with this movie the more I'm talking about it step by step now.
I think you might give it a fuck you movie by the end.
We might be heading there, okay? There's a chance. So regarding Elektra, so yes, we pick up with her after the events of Daredevil. And yeah, she's been brought back to life. She's angry. She wants revenge. Her father's, you know, death is still driving her. Her mother, I guess she gets somewhat of closure in a weird way that of her mother's death. Because she does mention in Daredevil and this that her mother was murdered when she was a child, right? Earlier in the early parts of this movie, we see this like devil with horns figure. And I'm like, what the fuck is that about? By the end of the movie, it's like, ooh, reveal. It's the main villain guy, sort of, who's wants to take over the hand. He's not, because the other guy is like the head of the hand, but he's in two scenes. It's the same dude that played Shang Tsung in the original Mortal Kombat. He's just like there.
Oh, and yeah, right.
He doesn't really do shit, but like this guy is like, hey, he tells him, hey, if you can go ahead and take out Elektra and get us the treasure, you can run the hand. That's basically what it is, right? So we find out, this is the person that killed Elektra's mother. So she wants revenge on the other person who murdered her parents, because she never got to kill Bullseye. I mean, Daredevil handled it, being that Elektra was dead. Right? Being that Elektra was fucking dead at that point, in all fairness to Elektra, she couldn't get revenge because she's dead. So, So Matt Murdock did handle that part of it for him by throwing Bullseye out of fucking church window. But, yeah, she goes to assassinate. She's hired by Stick, and I'm going to say hired by Stick, to murder this guy and his daughter who has the treasure, and his daughter's the treasure now. And apparently other people were the treasure. And I think Elektra was the treasure at one point, and Typhoid Mary was the treasure, she says, at one point. So I don't know how the fuck this whole treasure thing works.
No.
Weird.
Sorry. Relax. It's Typhoid. Yes. Not Typhoid Mary, because they clearly didn't own the rights. Just like that guy is clearly not Tombstone, but like John Gravely or whatever the fuck they call him, like Granite or something.
They call him some shit like that. Which we'll get to those assholes in a second, because the way that all these members of the Hand die are completely absurd. But back to Elektra. So she is about to complete the mission and kill them and complete the contract. And she's ready to fucking kill them and decides to not do it at the last second because she catches like some sort of heart. She's like the evil heart that finds some sort of compassion for this. And then they go into some weird, completely unearned sympathy she has for the child. And she also has this completely lazy, like, flirting with the father, whose name is Mark Miller, in this as well.
All of that is forced.
Okay, thank you. Because, it's super lazy, comes out of nowhere.
It's all forced, and I know we'll get to it, but it is somehow even worse in the director's cut, because they take out one scene and the one and only scene that gives us any sort of chemistry between her and the girl, which is when the girl breaks into the apartment and she catches her stealing, and like they have this moment. Jennifer Garner's kind of like, get out of here, you scamp. Because and then that's why the conversation comes up later, where the guy comes up and is like, I'm sorry, my daughter, she broke into your house. Director's cut takes that out for some fucking reason. Not that it's a great scene, but it is the glue that makes like the whole invitation to Christmas. Oh, yeah, by the way, this is a Christmas movie, guys. Oh, what? It wasn't mentioned before. It won't be mentioned again, and there's nothing Christmas up. Go fuck yourself. Watch Elektra. Anyway, real lazy.
You lose this union Italian dude is pretty hard.
I don't know where this came from. I mean, by the way, for anyone listening, I am in a union. I'm a very pro-union guy. I don't know why I decided this character's coming out, but it is what it is.
So they have this weird thing that happens twice in this movie where it's this forced romance between the two, which really isn't one, because they have this, Elektra and Mark Miller have this thing where he goes ahead and kisses her, and she's like, oh, yeah, I hated that, when he apologizes.
Oh,
and
God,
the roles are reversed at the end of it. Dude, what is that? Like, what is it either
bad
time?
Writing? It's...
But it goes nowhere.
It's supposed to come off as playful flirting, but I have seen more chemistry in The Dead than I do Jennifer Garner and whoever this guy is. Like, there's just no chemistry there, so it doesn't come off as playful flirting. It comes off, as you said, as like, what is this?
Yeah, it's just a really bizarre, both times it happens, it's bizarre, and there's zero payoff to it whatsoever. Because Jason, back to my whole point though, with pushing back against the whole her story arc of being like a family person, no, she like is okay, I'm not going to kill these people, cool, do what you gotta do with your daughter, you guys, I'm gonna leave you guys in my fucking parents' house, apparently, which I don't know who owns this thing or what's going on with it. It just has white sheets all over it for some weird reason. At the end of the movie, she leaves to talk to Stick and leaves them, I guess, the house.
Yeah, but there is like the moments of You know, that was sequel setup. Let's be clear. They thought they were getting a sequel on this. And because she has the moment where she thinks the kid dies, and the kid's a superhero, right? Like, she has superpowers, and I don't think she knows that at that point. But she's like, Cassie, I think that's her name. Cassie, I just met you, and you've been taken from me.
Abby,
and
it's Abby. Like,
oh, Abby, there you go. Damn, yeah. Almost close. But it was like this whole unearned moment, and it was like she's acting this like she just lost her daughter. Like, that's why I said that. Like, because she has these connections with these people that are completely unearned, just to shoehorn her into a mother girlfriend role.
And that's the thing. I don't even. To me, she doesn't even get there. I just think she like has compassion for them, and it just never even happens. You're actually applying more to it than he did.
Hey, podcast guy, shut the fuck up. Take your own advice. Shut the fuck up. Sit down. Turn your brain off. You're watching Elektra. Did you see her wear that red top, huh? The red top was pretty hot, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the big spin. It's like, ooh, wait, Elektra wears red in the comics? Oh, people complained about her costume in Daredevil? She's got this random red suit on in this movie. And apparently is a thing of legend, according to the guy that she kills in the beginning of the movie.
Yes. The skimpy red suit from the comic is a thing of legend. It's so dumb. So dumb.
The guy McCabe, who is her agent and keeps telling her that these people are dead, that they have no chance against the hand, within a day apparently decides to give his life to protect these people and Elektra.
It makes
as
no
they're
sense.
Escaping. How about that, huh?
It makes no sense. This guy, this is the guy who says, yes, come, stay with me, and then calls the hand, like, hey, yo, don't come, don't kill me, but, and look, try not to kill Elektra, but those people you want dead, they're fucking here, you know? Like, he's the guy who betrays them, but in this one, he's, like, letting himself, he's sacrificing himself? Makes no sense.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
But equally, Ed, I'm going to say it makes no sense that Elektra would bring them there to this guy who she's known for a while, who's actually her one and only confidant in the fucking world of hitmanery. It makes no sense she's going to bring this guy and kid that she's known for 3 days and sacrifice her friend for these people. Like, that makes no sense either. Like, none of this is emotionally earned anywhere in this movie.
I think the idea of her leaving when she gets kicked out of the Styx good guy ninja clan over there, again, which goes nameless, why she decides to become an assassin for hire, they don't really give a reason to why that happens either, besides her being angry.
Well, I think it's a deleted scene where it's literally just the producers of, was this Fox or Sony, wherever, what the fuck company, bullshit company
Fox,
this was,
Fox.
Going, hey, Fox, she was an assassin in the comic. Make it happen. That's the reason.
I guess because we don't get any of that, because I would have thought that as soon as she gets brought back to life, like, why would she have ditched Matt Murdock or anything? Like, you would think naturally the person would have been like, okay, let me go help the person who was trying to, who got revenge for me on my father's killer. And who I know is a hero and who apparently you were in love with, but suddenly you're not in love with anymore.
Yeah. You know what they should have done? Crazy.
Because solo movie needs to happen.
That's right. Yes. They should have done what they did in with Catwoman and Batman Returns, right? Like, we see her come back, maybe not in the beginning, but, you know, no, she's already come back, right? Something has changed in her. She's not the same person. That's why she can't go back to him, right? Like, something, some thought, a line of dialogue.
Yeah, anything. And apparently that was in a deleted scene on the DVD for Elektra, where Ben Affleck does shoot one scene as Matt Murdock. And it's one of her random premonitions.
And neither of those found their... That didn't find their way into either of these shitty editions of this movie?
which I'm kind of blown away by. The fact that I expected it to be in the director's cut, but it's not.
I'm going to say this, because I know we're getting to it eventually. Mm-hmm. I think the director's cut is worse than the theatrical cut.
I agree, but I also don't think there's that much of a difference, if I'm being honest.
No,
I think
that's the thing.
Slight changes, yeah.
It's slight changes that makes it more incompetent.
Yeah.
Somehow.
I agree. And that's a tough task to pull off, to make this movie more incompetent than the theatrical cut was. I guess we can talk about Abby. She's the child who's considered to be the treasure in this movie, who has this magic gold chain out of nowhere that she knows how to use. And that's
so she does.
And she apparently gets made contact with by Typhoid and gets resuscitated by Elektra by magical Mr. Miyagi powers, because she literally does rub her hands together and touches her and suddenly it's all good.
Yeah, well, and you another deleted scene where she was going wax on, wax off.
The thing is, when she left Styx good guy ninja clan, she left for another sensei, and it was Mr. Miyagi the whole time. That's where she went.
That'd be great. I want to see a movie where she just murders Terry Silver.
So, I mean, Abby's pretty annoying, to be honest with you, as a character. She's just kind of there. And just,
very annoying.
She steals Elektra's chain, and then is just told, no, get lost, you little rascal. And that's pretty much it. And she's the treasure that we're led to believe that this whole entire story is banking on, between the good and evil are fighting over her. What?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's so stupid. And I hate overly written petulant teenagers in movies. And that's what this is. Like, as someone who works around teenagers, and I work with very smart teenagers, none of them speak like this. None of them think like this. Sometimes I watch these movies with petulant teenagers, and I think, has anyone who's ever written a fucking screenplay ever been a teenager themselves? Because she's... yeah. She's so smart, alecky, and sassy, and then when you find out she's super powered, it's even worse. And I don't know. It's just such a fucking stock character.
And I think that's the way a lot of these things are written. Because I guess we could talk about the hand also in this. We talked about Styx briefly. Honestly, that's all Styx really has to do in this movie. I mean, he's there. There's no mention of Matt Murdock whatsoever, which is very bizarre that 20th Century Fox owned the rights to Styx and just chose to completely leave him out of Daredevil. We're like, oh, let's throw him at Elektra.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, it kind of, like, it was nice to see Terrence Stamp as Styx, but also it made me fucking angry that I didn't get to see Terrence Stamp as Styx in the Daredevil movie. Like, we could have cut out one of those erroneous fight scenes to give me one or two scenes of Terrence Stamp Styx.
Ooh, I got an idea which fight scene could have been left out of Daredevil to include the Styx.
We know.
Yeah.
We know. We do.
Little playground action.
Yeah, exactly.
So if we talk about the hand. So the hand really circulates around, besides these random ninjas that when they die, they apparently turn to, there's a flash of light and there's green smoke for some bizarre reason that keeps on happening, which I don't know what the hell was going on there. It almost seemed like it was like, hey, we can't make this rated R, so we gotta do something weird to keep the violence down.
That's exactly what it was. That's exactly what it was. It reminds me actually of the show, which I'm a big fan of, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and that show invented the whole concept of when you stake a vampire, it turns them to dust. Why'd they do that? Well, because it was a hell of a lot less graphic than seeing a dead vampire body with a Styx jutting out of its thing, and they wanted kids to watch this. Same thing here.
Yeah, I can't disagree. And that's the only explanation I can possibly put to this thing. Sorry, so the hand really consists of like four characters and some one random dude who pops up for one scene and gets killed out of nowhere, and then there's no explanation for him. So we get Kiriji, who's the leader of the hand in this, or the guy who's trying to take over that I mentioned earlier. We get Typhoid, who was obviously supposed to be Typhoid Mary, but they decided to call her Typhoid for whatever goofy reason they do that. Stone and Tattoo. So Stone is an indestructible character who Elektra tries to stab with her size. They shatter, but then a tree falls on him, and then he dies?
Dumb.
What?
He could take a shotgun blast to the chest, which he does in this movie, but can't take a tree.
Bizarre. Tattoo just kind of sits around and tracks people and has a tattoo of a wolf and an eagle and a bunch of snakes. And he kind of just like sits there and meditates while this is going on. And Elektra just walks up to him and snaps his fucking neck.
Yeah, that's what I call the Darth Maul effect. Someone looks super cool and you're just waiting for him to do something. Waiting. And he just fucking sits there and gets his neck snapped, or in the case of Darth Maul, gets cut in half. At least Darth Maul got to kill Qui-Gon Jinn, but still, like, it's the Darth Maul effect.
Yeah, because Tattoo does just about nothing but make cool images pop off his body.
And he's the coolest looking of them, and I thought that was a cool scene. They actually look cool when the wolf comes like jutting out of him. Like that was good CGI for the time. I thought it looked good.
Yeah.
But yeah, they do nothing with him.
Yeah, and then we get Typhoid, who is Typhoid Mary, obviously, who when we're introduced to her, she randomly sneak attack kisses Elektra and puts her in puts her into a coma, but not really. It just gets her really sick for a little bit, and it's like Stick looks at her, is like, "Oh, get some rest; you'll be fine."
Yeah,
that's it. That's all it takes.
That's it. Hey, look, you wanted stakes. You wanted consequences and stakes. Get the fuck out of here. Go to another movie. You want that? All right. We gave you a little taste of something. It was cleared up. Everything's gonna be fine. Shut the fuck up. Watch Elektra.
And. So Typhoid goes ahead and also touches Abby, and she goes into some weird coma, which seems to be more effective. But then after, you know, it was before Elektra heals her, she just throws one of her scythes through about 10 bushes, and it randomly stabs her, and she dies?
Why not?
How easily disposable is the hand?
It was, you understand it. It was the point of the screenplay that in the screenplay class the writer took, they said, this is the time to start resolving conflicts. Start with the smaller ones you didn't bother to set up and end with the bigger ones. That's exactly what it starts doing at this part of the movie.
Now, are we going to say that the Typhoid and Elektra kiss was that risque? I mean, was that what we were going for here?
I mean, it wasn't sexy. It wasn't memorable. I actually forgot they kissed till you just said it. I don't know. I don't know what the fuck they were trying to accomplish with this. Like,
it comes out of nowhere because she's fighting another character dealing with something else. All of a sudden, it's like, wham, kiss me. And then that's what happens here. And it's like this slow motion fall that they do. It's very weird. It's so weird, just like so many things in this fucking movie.
Yeah.
Like, they're just so forced and bizarre. And then we get Kiriji, who is the younger dude played by Will Yoon Lee in this. He's the one who was revealed that he killed Elektra's mother. They have this battle towards the end in the house, in Elektra's parents' house, where there's these white sheets flying all over the place for some strange fucking reason. And... That happens. There's just so many things that just happen, and you're like, why is this happening? And we get nothing for it. And she also goes ahead and kills him fairly easily, too, after they have this like semi-decent fight, And then he gets thrown down a well and he turns to fucking like a flash and green dust again. And that's that.
I mean, yeah. The only two people hard to kill in this movie are Elektra and Abby.
Yes. And apparently Mark Miller, even though he doesn't really do anything to fight the hand off, he's just kind of there.
He's just there. He's there. He's moral support. Yeah. He's a cool dad.
I guess. I mean, yeah. I don't know, man. It's, I don't know. It's frustrating. This movie has 11% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it makes perfect sense why.
And that is 10% too high. This is no. All right, again, maybe 5% too high. Again, not the worst thing I've seen, but certainly the laziest and unpleasant. I didn't enjoy this at all, and I nothing could have elevated it because it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, this is one of the movies that I trying to think of another movie that set up so many things but that just never paid off. This movie just constantly keeps setting things up that don't pay off ever.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly, and you're waiting, and you're waiting, and you're waiting, and it just ends.
Yeah. And thankfully, it was only like an hour and 37 minutes.
That was nice. That was nice.
That's one of the, I take that back, that's one of the silver linings that I can say about this movie. Pretty sure.
This is a couple things.
And
the theatrical trailer, still only an hour and 40 minutes. It doesn't add anything. It just it takes a scene out and maybe adds a scene in. And that's about it.
So I'll just switch the title cards for the heck of it. So if you're wondering the director's cut, don't waste your time. Just watch one of the fucking versions. It's really not that different at all. I mean, Jason, I know you wanted to highlight a couple of things that were taken out that made this movie less even more incoherent than the theatrical cut.
Yeah, I would say watch the theatrical cut if you have to watch one of these. And again, I only clocked one scene being removed, but it was a fucking pivotal scene for what they were setting up. It was a scene where Abby breaks in and steals the locket. That you get out of here, you scamp, because that at least establishes some rapport between these characters. Like Jennifer, Elektra's about to like Elektra's giving her the business, and then she kind of sees that she's just a scamp and lets her go. And at least that gives context for the hey, come over for Christmas dinner. Ha ha! No one knew it was Christmas, and don't worry, we won't mention it again. but without that scene, like. I was trying to put myself in the position of if I watched that one first, when he comes up to her and goes, "So you met my daughter. Sorry, she broke into your house." I'd have been sitting there going, "Did I miss something? Yeah. When did that happen? That seems like something I should see. Why are they introducing this character like this?" So, yeah, that's the scene that I kind of noted they took out. But again, it does make it more incompetent.
And I think McCabe gets decapitated in the director's cut, but not in the theatrical cut.
Oh, yes, that's right. I did clock that. Right. And I forgot about that. Which McCabe decapitated.
Yeah, like I feel like they just allude to him dying in the original one, and then the director's cut. You're actually like, oh shit, he really gets decapitated in this one.
Yeah.
And,
which makes, and again, it makes less sense because he is the guy. Why would he let himself be decapitated over two marks?
I don't know. That whole thing just makes no fucking sense at all. Again, more setups, things that are forced, don't pay off. It's the whole movie. It's just honestly, it's just really is the entire fucking movie that. Both versions of it. It's the same problems. Doesn't change anything. And the fact that the Matt Murdock scene, because I knew that this existed, I was shocked that it was not in a director's cut. Totally shocked.
Yeah. Why would you decide not to put that in any cut if you have actual connective tissue between this movie with inflection and Daredevil?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm actually going to see if I can pull up the, let's see, They pull up this. Did you? So you didn't see that, right?
No, I've never seen it.
Right, let me see if I can go ahead and pull up a decent copy of this that's here. Okay. So let me go ahead and I'll skip to it quickly because they, for some reason, the people who have this stuff up, they decided to not cut the scenes. They just decided to make it one long running thing.
Oh, geez, that's great.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very goofy. Sorry about that.
No. As Ed does that, I can
yes.
talk a bit more about Alias, which I've been watching, which is again, if you really need to see Jennifer Garner kicking ass as a spy, Alias is what you want.
Yeah, I mean, she kicks ass in this movie, like for the very brief time she gets to actually fight. So I can't say that. All right, so let's bring it up on the screen and we can watch this thing together.
All right.
So this actually is the deleted scene with Matt Murdock in it, for those who may not have seen it. And let's watch it, and we can try to figure out how the fuck this didn't end up in either version of this movie.
Are you coming back? Come back, Elektra.
When I'm ready.
I'll be waiting for you.
So there you go.
Like, how did that not wind up in it? Like, it actually acknowledges Daredevil existed. It actually acknowledges how Daredevil ended. I'm baffled why they wouldn't have put that in.
I don't know. And I think it should have been in both versions of the movie. Like, if you're trying to sell this movie, why would you not have that? And why would you not feature some clip of that together in the trailer? Like, how does that end up on a cutting room floor? Because they explained that she might actually be going back. It doesn't make any fucking sense, man.
Yeah. Hey, you know, Ed, let me tell you what happened. What happened was this, all right? The editor, he had a lunch break. We were like, hey, buddy, don't cut that. Throw that shit in the floor. We don't need it, all right? He threw it on the floor. He went and got a sandwich. It was the best sandwich of his life. What do you want from him? All right, go watch the movie. Sit down, shut up, watch fucking Elektra.
Man, and these union guys that were working on Elektra, man, they were fucking tough, man.
You don't fuck with these union guys, man. They'll break any games. Like, I shouldn't even be making these jokes. They're going to be coming for me. The only thing that protects me is I'm in a union.
All right, so listen. Consensus is...
Skip
Elektra. There's no need for this.
Like, here's the thing. I never saw this movie. It didn't ruin my life. This isn't like Transformers, where I'm like, this is time I'll never get back and I'm pissed about it. This is kind of just like, give me 3 years and I'll be back to saying I've never seen this movie before because I won't remember it because it is so there's nothing there. It's not even like crazy balls to the wall, like Punisher Warzone, where it's like, it's stupid, but see it because some of it's fun. There's no fun to be had here.
Yeah, there's absolutely nothing. There's just nothing. That's basically it. Quick comment here from Alex. What's up, buddy? Long time no see. Yeah. Is Elektra a Spider-Man villain, or have I been wrong the whole time? Alex, unfortunately, you are definitely have been wrong the whole time. She's a frenemy of Daredevil. She's featured in season 2 of Daredevil in the Netflix, now you know, Disney Plus series of Daredevil. So, yeah, definitely not much to do with Spider-Man, but
street but level. I understand the confusion because she's quite electric.
Bazinga.
It's Electro. Come on, guys.
Yeah, Electro. Electro is a Spider-Man.
Exactly.
Which, by the way, is what I yell at Angie whenever she leaves a light on in a room. I just start screaming Electro. She's running up there.
That's awesome.
All right. So, yeah, I can't recommend this movie at all. It's bad. It should be forgotten about. Doesn't really fucking... There's no reason to revisit this. Hey, Jason, it could be one thing. Maybe in Deadpool versus Wolverine, if the Jennifer Gardner and Ben Affleck cameos show up, maybe they do some sort of redeeming of these characters in a way. Briefly, I don't know. Maybe kind of like how Andrew Garfield got redeemed with Spider-Man No Way Home.
I mean, I think at the very least, it's going to be funny. I think at the very, like, I don't think it's going to be like we watched Andrew Garfield and we're like, wow, that was good. You know, wow, he could have been a good Spider-Man. I think we're going to watch this and go, I'm glad they have a good sense of humor about it. I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. I think they'll give something, but who knows? Maybe we'll get like comics accurate, you know, costumes or some crap like that. I don't know. It could be something.
That'd be great.
Yeah, it could be something.
That'd be great. I don't know. And again, I actually would love to see Ben Affleck now in his career take on like a version of Matt Murdock. Because again, I think he's gotten better with age.
I agree. So whatever. You can go with it. Glad we checked it out. This is the first times I've actually watched this movie in full. I've always seen it in clips here and there at times.
Yeah.
And, you know, my opinion, that really hasn't changed. If anything, I actually am walking away saying, yeah, this movie is a big turd. This is definitely one that I know why I somehow
skipped. I had a better opinion of this movie before I saw it.
Yeah, agreed. All right, so that wraps it up for us this week. Thanks for joining us as always. Checking us out on Facebook. Be sure to check out Granny's PC's Facebook group. So we drop a bunch of trailers and articles and stuff like that that don't make the show, even though we are peppering in some more news now. There's a whole bunch more out there. So check that out. Be sure to join that. Also check out Pop Culture Pros Facebook group as well, because that's what we are presented by, Pop Culture Pros. Check us out on YouTube. Subscribe to Pop Culture Pros. And on X, follow at Pop Culture Pros, because that's where you can find all the good stuff that's there as well. Jason and I will be back next week, a President's Day edition of Granny's Peach Tea, Monday night, 8:30. Jason is trying so hard to hide his excitement because Madam Web has finally arrived.
You know, 4 score and 6 days from now, I have to go watch this fucking movie. And I don't want to. I don't want to see it. Haven't I done enough for this podcast? I sat through Carnage. I sat through Venom. I sat through Carnage. I sat through Morbius. I've sat through all 5 Transformer movies. Do I have to pay to see Madam Web?
I mean, I can try to configure a way to try to make me not pay for Madam Web. But
no, it's not. You know, it's not the money.
No, it's not about the money. It's about the fucking principle of it. I totally understand why. But, man, it's... Jason, I can just tell you this. The Rotten Tomatoes score has not been kind, because the... let me pull up. We'll see where it's exactly at right now. No one should be shocked. 72 reviews. Jason, this movie is sitting at 18%. Elektra was at 11%.
Oh, God. This movie might not even live up to the standards of Elektra. Are you fucking kidding me? Why are we making Spider-Man-less Spider-Man movies? And at least look, Venom, I get. It's stupid, but there's an argument to be made. Venom was briefly in the 90s an anti-hero with his own comic line. Argument to be made. Morbius, we got Jared Leto attached to the project. That's something, right? He's excited. But then now, like Madam Web, like I don't know any of these people, as in actors or fucking characters. Like we're scraping the bottom of the like. I get it, Spider Woman. I know who Madam Web is. I've heard of these people, but we are scraping the bottom of the Spider-Man barrel with this.
Remember, there was supposed to be a Silver Sable movie as well at one point.
Yes, and that would also be scraping the bottom of the barrel.
The door?
We're talking F-list Spider-Man characters. Scraping at the door.
Jason, is there a chance that this movie might make you yearn for the days when we were scraping at the door?
I think the only movies this movie won't make me yearn for are the Transformers movies. I'm really expecting this to be bad.
Yeah. Well, you ever sit there, Jason, and just yearn? Yearn? It's a Kramer quote. I had to drop it. It's a very obscure Kramer quote.
Very nice. Very
I think he asks, if I remember right, he asks as George if he's ever yearned before.
Before we sign off, because the audience might like this, did I tell you that I saw Jerry Seinfeld live last week?
Did you at the Beacon?
Yeah.
Yes. How was it? How did you enjoy it? Me and Angie went last summer.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Cool. So he's still got it, as you know, if you've seen him. He's hysterical. But there was this one heckler, and he wasn't heckling. He was just like yelling shit out because he was probably drunk. But man, the way Seinfeld masterfully handles people in a way that you gotta walk away feeling like shit. This guy calls out like Seinfeld's just he's doing his bit, and someone calls out like a marine biologist. And of course, everyone in the place, including Jerry Seinfeld, knows exactly where that's coming from. And he goes, I have to admit, I have no idea how you got from where I was saying to marine biologist. The guy calls out, it's a Seinfeld episode. And Jerry Seinfeld just goes, so it is. And he just gets back to his set.
That's spectacular. That is spectacular. Oh, that's great. That's great. I'm tempted to go see him again, honestly. I am tempted to go see it again because I heard that the show, it's not like the same exact thing, that it has changed up a little bit.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's if you can, I would. I mean, he's always really funny. And the material was really strong.
Nice. All right, so we will see you next week. If you can, go see Madam Web and join us for that because I have a feeling it's going to be entertaining for me just to have this conversation with Jason about this movie. So I have a feeling we got a fucking movie coming. I'm going to call it right now.
Yeah. You might. We might. I'm going to call it right now. And that doesn't mean I'm going to rig it. Those have to come naturally. But I feel this might be a movie that pisses me off that much.
Ooh, I can't wait. All right. We'll see you next week. Peace.